Welcome to the Informed Pregnancy and Parenting Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Elliot Berlin, prenatal chiropractor, childbirth educator, and labor doula. In today's episode, we'll be getting the skinny on exercise and fitness during and after pregnancy. My co-host today is Ivy Joeva, a holistic nutritionist specializing in pre- and postnatal nutrition and women's health. She's been a birth doula and childbirth educator for nearly 10 years and teaches prenatal, yin, and restorative yoga. Ivy offers worldwide nutritional support and consults for new and expecting moms and their families at prenatalnutrition.com. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
Our two powerhouse guests in the studio are Dr. Lindsay Matthews and Emily Rusak. Lindsay Matthews is a chiropractor specializing in the biomechanics and movement patterns of the body and restoring mechanical integrity of the nervous system. She lives in Venice, California, where she founded and leads BirthFit, a rock star movement aimed at educating and empowering women through their motherhood transition. She's also a coach at Deuce Gym, a strength and conditioning school. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for having me.
Emily Rusak, also known as Embo.
Yep.
Embo Slice.
That's me.
Emily has been an athlete for more than 20 years with a broad array of sports and disciplines. As a coach at Deuce Gym, she was introduced to Lindsay and her birth work and then became involved herself. In 2014, Emily became a labor doula and began training prenatal and postpartum clients and teaching the BirthFit postpartum series. Her passion for helping women use their voice to choose exactly what they want to do with their bodies has been Emily's mission with BirthFit.
Yep.
Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you.
All right. So for a little bit of background, before we get to pregnancy, what's your philosophy on health and wellness in general?
Oh, that's a loaded question.
Go.
You got it.
So my philosophy, I think I just really want everyone around me to feel good and feel their best selves. And I think fitness is kind of the catalyst, at least what I've seen at CrossFit gyms. Fitness is where it all starts because you can see it. You see people working out. You see people getting fit. Like, I should do that. I want to do that. And then all of a sudden, you start to learn about everything that kind of encompasses being quote unquote fit mm-hmm. or healthy. So my philosophy, I guess, is I just want that to be the stepping stone into learning about your nutrition and everything that you can do to better your body.
Where did you start in your fitness journey?
I've always played sports ever since I was a kid. I just did it because it was fun. And that kind of goes along with this doing what feels good.
Were you competitive as a kid?
I myself was not the most competitive person, but I played on competitive teams, yeah. And then in college, I was on University of San Diego's rowing team for 1 year, but that was a complete life changer. I understood what it was to be on a Division I team, and that's how I found CrossFit. So that kind of catapulted me into this world of fitness, and I'm just trying to share it with everyone.
Oh, great.
What about She's also the strongest woman in California.
Yeah. I read that online.
Yeah.
So I did a competition called California Strongest Woman. There are stronger women out there than me, but I have the title.
You have the title. You have the belt.
Yeah.
Is it a belt?
I got a plaque. That's on the wall.
I got a plaque.
It's pink.
Own it, woman.
Yeah. What?
Own it.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's unfortunate. I was trying out for that title.
It was cool.
It didn't go well for me. All right, Lindsay, what about you? What's your background? I grew up in Texas.
Yeah, I grew up in Texas. I also grew up playing sports. I grew up playing soccer.
Were you competitive?
Very.
I figured.
I would play soccer with anybody in the neighborhood. And when we moved from Dallas to a smaller town outside of Austin, they didn't have a women's traveling team. And like I was in sixth grade. So I tried out for the men's traveling team.
Oh.
Like, I was like, oh, well, they've got to have a spot for me. They didn't.
Oh.
So
we run into similar roadblocks.
Yeah. So I grew up playing soccer and cheerleading in Texas. So that was actually pretty competitive. And then I blew my knee out my junior year in high school. So that kind of started me on my journey into like the wellness world. And
doing rehab on your knee?
Yeah. I had this great surgeon. His name is Dr. Jesse DeLee, and he's in San Antonio, Texas. And
phone number 323-555.
I don't know if he still practices, but he was that, like, I consulted with like three different surgeons. I was like, I have to play in college. He was the only one that told me, well, you're going to be as good as you put effort in to be.
Oh.
And he made me rehab before surgery. He made me rehab after surgery. He connected me with a chiro.
Was that your first introduction to chiropractic?
Yeah, which is really interesting that he connected me. And then I went back and I decided I didn't want to be an orthopedist based on, you know, my life experiences. And I went back to that chiro and like shadowed him. And I was like, oh, yeah, this is kind of what I wanted to do. But yeah, I actually did some, when I went to Texas A&M, they have a cheerleading squad that's just competitive, and they also have intramural soccer, so that's what I did.
Oh, perfect.
They only have guy yell leaders, so anybody that asks is like, why didn't you cheer for A&M? Well, because they have 5 male yell leaders, so women can't really be yell leaders there. So I continued all through that and then played soccer in chiro school.
Where'd you go to school?
Southern California University of Health Sciences.
Oh, I've heard of it, yes.
Isn't that where you went?
No, I went to Life University.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. SCUS. I went to SCUS.
You went to SCUS. I was going to go to SCUS, but it's SCUS.
It's SCUS. Yeah, and then I thought I wanted to work with, you know, athletes my whole life, and I was exposed to the training center and professional athletes, and then I just was like, God, this isn't, it's not fulfilling to me, and so here I am.
Yeah, how did you segue into prenatal care?
Because,
I mean, they're kind of athletes anyway.
Yeah, for sure. And that's, you know, kind of what was the whole viewpoint that I was, like, mind-shifting with people. I think I had a client that, a few clients were, I would get basically all the women that would come into the rehab place I was at. Because at the time I was the only female chiropractor there. Mm-hmm. And I had this one woman that was an actress, and you know, they got certain timelines, and she was like, I want to be in the best shape of my life to get pregnant, to have a baby, yada yada. And I just kept thinking about that. Well, fast forward, while I was out treating, like on set, you either have a lot of time, like where you're standing and watching, or you have a lot of time where you're just waiting. And so that waiting time, I just started reading a lot. And that's where I started my ICPA diplomat course. And I just started reading more because I didn't know anything. And this lady would ask me questions. Other women would come and ask me questions. And I would say, you know, I have no idea because I don't have kids, but let's find out the answers. So I started doing doula training. I did hypnobirthing training. So just started attending births. And I was like, okay.
Just well, contagious.
Yeah, and then addictive. I figured, you know, just as much kind of, I don't know, just as much bullshit as there is in the nutrition or the fitness world or whatever, there's just as much bullshit floating around in the birth world. So it's like, okay, somebody's got to, like,
Make a bumper sticker.
Yeah, let's talk about this.
So what is that bullshit you would say that's floating around in the birth world?
That's a good question.
I mean, this could go into another a whole path.
Yeah.
Pick a bullshit, any bullshit.
Well, in general, I just think birth in America is business. Like people are out for money. And unfortunately, it doesn't take the woman's needs or desires or wants into account a lot of the times. And women are often left, you know, they're just victims of this horrible situation, you know.
It's tough. I think medicine in general has become just incredibly generalized and not individualized.
There's
and
no
pregnancy
uniqueness.
Is so individual, and each one should be so different, and the system's not set up to support that.
No, not at all. And especially for those that maybe don't have enough money or can't pay for the individualistic care. That's basically what, you know, I see as
just a herd.
Yeah, and I think something that, like, I'm sure we will get into, but, you know, what Lindsay has done and what I've began to do is, like, helping these women understand that their bodies are individual and they can move and they shouldn't be afraid and they can do all these things, like the fear-mongering part of the generalization of that world is pretty big.
And yet, is there any fears that you think would be warranted? Like, do you ever prescribe not to go full out or not to lift weights for certain cases?
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, even with
you know, someone with a knee injury at the gym, like, don't lift that weight. You know, not that pregnancy is an injury, of course, or a sickness, but at the same time,
yeah,
it's like,
yeah, we don't view it as that.
No, not at all. But it's like you have modifications.
Right.
Because your body is changing every single day.
There's a certain way you can approach any and everything.
Yeah. Something we tell our women is do what you've been doing. If you haven't done that before pregnancy, maybe do that after pregnancy. Like, don't try something brand new right away. But
well, if you want to talk about load specifically,
yeah, like lifting,
there's certain ways, like in our online training, I mean, this we could get really specific now, but in our online training, let's say if there's a heavy single push press programmed, so a push press is a load overhead. Basically, our women are
we're on radio,
just,
kind
just,
of.
I just showed them what I was doing, which is great stability for the core, great shoulder activation, range of motion. And all of our women, we kind of use an adaption of the conjugate programming, which is a whole nother thing, but they're instructed to only take lifts they know they can make. So yeah, that's a huge psychological benefit. They're only allowed to take lifts, three or four lifts that are above 80%, and they're warmed up. They've done
proper activations. Very technical, and that's good. That's good. I want to get there in a second, but I want to get your background, Ivy. You're not from Texas. You
actually grew up in L.A.
Oh, you grew up in L.A.? Mm-hmm. Really?
Me too.
Yeah.
Where were you born?
I was born at Cedars-Sinai.
Whoa. I've heard of it.
Whoa.
Yeah. Yeah.
And did you leave and come back, or are you still here?
I went away to college in Berkeley, and I've lived in New York, I've lived in London, I've lived out of the country. But yeah, back in LA for the last 6 years.
Welcome home.
Thank you.
What got you involved in the birth world?
You know, that's an interesting question. I feel like it was a calling, and I know, you know, that sounds pretty esoteric, but it was like I met a doula actually right when I moved back to LA from New York, and just as soon as I met her, I just felt like she embodied this quality that I wanted to be able to touch in myself, and I couldn't put my finger on it, I couldn't put words to it. I'd never heard of what a doula was before. And then, you know, it just so happened that the woman that had trained her, Judy Chapman, had a training the following weekend, and the minute I set foot in that training and heard Judy speak, I just felt it in my body. I was like, this is what I need to do. I feel like for the first time it put me in touch with what it means to be female in a way that we're not taught. You know, we're taught how to have power if we can have the kind of power that men have, or we're taught how to have power if we can be sexy and appeal to a man's taste in that way. But we're not really taught the really primal, embodied, raw power that is what it is to be female. And yeah, that's what you see in the birth room.
And you had already done nutrition before that?
I've been studying nutrition for many years.
You know a lot when it comes to nutrition.
Well,
I throw stuff at you all the time. You're just like, oh, yeah, gestational thrombocytopenia. Who doesn't know about that?
My undergraduate degree is in psychoneuroimmunology. So that was just a really fancy way of saying the mind-body connection. Mm-hmm. And I had a lot of nutrition studies, you know, in my 20s also because I was raised vegetarian. And so trying to be a dancer and an athlete on a vegetarian diet living in the dorms presented its own challenges. So I had to kind of become an expert.
I think we've all had that problem.
it was actually after becoming a doula that I studied with the Institute of Integrative Nutrition and became a holistic health counselor.
Well, I want to talk about, if it's cool with you guys, I want to go through a pregnancy. It's amazing, by the way. You don't have kids either, right? It's amazing to me.
Not that we know of, no.
No kiddos.
Not that we know of. Yeah. I understand the mental demands of motherhood. I see it every day in my practice. That's why I'm excited about Needed's new cognitive support. Unlike other supplements, it's specifically formulated with postpartum and breastfeeding moms in mind, using safe and effective ingredients. This means that moms can get the brain boost they deserve without compromising safety. Plus, it includes clinically studied ingredients, proven to support focus and memory. Hurry and get your cognitive support from Needed before you forget. Visit thisisneeded.com and use your code Berlin to get 20% off your initial order.
Sometimes the guys don't tell you.
Yeah.
it's amazing to me and also very exciting that more and more young women are getting into, you know, interested in pregnancy and birth and studying it beforehand, because it's kind of on the heels of a generation that just kind of was used to doing whatever their doctors told them to do. Mm-hmm. I think medicine was more individualistic in our parents' time, and the motivations were mostly about the patient, and now things have changed so much.
Yeah.
And we're coming off a generation that just was led into pregnancy and birth experiences that people wanted them to have, even if it's not what they wanted to have. So it's really exciting to see now people, way before getting pregnant and going through the pregnancy, really getting informed and empowered and spreading that to your peers. Very cool. I'd love to go through just, you know, a model pregnancy, you know, in the next 25 minutes. Let's take it through what it would be like. First trimester, you know, there's a whole lot of, in terms of exercise, physical fitness and exercise, where do you guys sit on that? A lot of people, especially with a lot of assisted reproductive technologies going on, you know, it was hard to get that little nugget in there. Very, you know, they're afraid sometimes to get out of their bed and go pee. So where do we sit with exercise in the first trimester? Is it delicate? Do we have to be really careful? Is that thing going to fall out?
Well, I think if they haven't had any IVF or any medical assistance, then most of the women just continue as they were doing. If they contact us and they set up a consultation, we go through like some of the exercises to avoid during pregnancy, even during that first trimester, like no sit-ups, no crunches, no toes to bar, no knees to elbows, that kind of stuff.
That sounds like a dream.
You know, I don't think there's enough research done on IVF yet. And, you know, we've worked with some people where their doctors are like, yeah, go ahead, continue whatever you were doing. And then other doctors, they're like, no, wait till you're 12 weeks or 15 weeks before doing any kind of exercise again.
What if you weren't doing anything?
If they weren't doing anything, we would just say, hey, wait, let's get out of the first trimester and let's set up a consultation when you're around 12 to 15 weeks.
Okay, so continue what you're already doing, whether you were doing or not.
Mm-hmm.
And then if you weren't, then pick it up in a second once you're out of the woods, quote unquote.
And if they're doing IVF, like we'd basically say, refer to your doctor for this.
It's probably smart, but I know you guys are going to end up doing the research, so that's okay.
We were just talking to somebody today about research.
I knew it. What about nausea and vomiting? Very common first trimester ailment. Do you let it slow you down? Sometimes low energy, or maybe the opposite. Can exercise help you overcome those symptoms?
Right. For the most part, I think our general population, they're part of the 95% complication-free pregnancies. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if they feel pretty shitty in the morning, they'll usually go for a walk, eat some kind of high-protein snack, and just a little bit of movement helps them a little bit.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, we've had some where they're like, I don't feel like doing anything.
Yeah.
And they just don't. And they pick back up, I think the second try.
Yeah, like the most important thing is just being in communication with your trainer. Like if you don't feel well and you don't think you can do the thing, we can push.
So you're of the philosophy that you listen to your body.
So weird, right?
Strange.
I know.
Well, you said something interesting. You said be in communication with your trainer. And I'm just curious, for a woman who maybe is listening who doesn't have a trainer.
Right.
How does she know whether it's one of those days where she's going to go outside and taking a walk and it's going to help, or whether it's time to just lie down and nap and take a rest?
Yeah, that's a really hard question. I think what we as birth people try to help with, and especially as birth rate, is like really understanding your body and knowing your body. And it's amazing how many people just have zero connection.
Right.
So if we can go along with the fitness and the mindset and everything that BirthFit is all about, and you know, share that, you will have a good sense of when it's okay and when it's not okay. But you know, you never really know. I can't speak for somebody else's body also.
Right. We do a little exercise where like let's say they're working with us remotely, they're instructed to keep a journal, and even if it's a smiley face or a line with, you know, indifferent face or a sad face, they're supposed to write down how they feel when they wake up.
You know, in today's day and age, there's 500 emojis to choose from.
There's a lot of emojis out there and a lot of feelings.
The monkey emojis today.
You know, and basically, you know, write a little bit about how you feel in the morning. Write a little bit about how you feel after you move, whether it's exercise or just a walk or whatever. And if that hasn't changed, then maybe the next day you don't exercise. Maybe you just work on recovery. And we speak a lot, not only just taking the day off, but recovery is a huge deal because you're not only growing a human, but you're building an organ. And recovery is just as important as training, as moving, as sleeping, as whatever you're putting in your body. So go to the chiropractor, get a massage, go to the float tank, do something, you know?
What do you do in the float tank?
You float.
Oh, brilliant.
That's huge. So what you're saying, by kind of tracking the experience in real time, you can kind of learn how to connect with your body.
If and it's so simple, like just smiley faces or sad faces or pissed off faces.
Yeah.
You get a little window as to, you know, okay, if I wake up and I put tired, then that's obviously, maybe I shouldn't do the most intense workout I'm going to do that week, that day, you know?
And I think that's especially important for the women who hadn't been exercising before pregnancy. It's like, okay.
That makes sense.
This is double important now. Yeah, you're pregnant and you're starting fitness.
Let's say all of a sudden, second trimester, boom, just like that. Now, the people who weren't exercising, you can start exercising with them. You can get them moving.
Yeah, second trimester is usually like the fun time. Like,
yeah,
people have all this energy. They're like, love being pregnant. They haven't reached that super big belly state where they're like, oh my God, get this out of me.
Right.
Even during that time, some women will set what we call PRs or personal records.
Oh.
And it's just because they feel great. They've been moving. They're eating well. Like, they're like, I could stay pregnant forever. And they're like,
oh. More energy than before the pregnancy. Go from like energy to really low energy first trimester to like even more than you had before sometimes, right? So you break your goals. Awesome. Yeah. But I hear this recommendation, you know, maybe you have about heart rates, or maybe you don't. Heart rates, or you got to be able to carry on casual conversation. Like, you don't want to get more winded than that.
The casual conversation is a good indicator, but
that's walking to the fridge for me.
Like, I mean, heart rate's going to vary from person to person. It's going to differ based on your DNA. Like, my heart rate's going to differ from Imbo's, who's, you know, almost 10 years younger than me. My heart rate's going to differ from, let's say, you know, an Olympic athlete that's training through her pregnancy.
Is there a calculation, though, based on age and fitness level?
So when we consult with women, if they want to take their heart rate, they're only allowed to compare their heart rate against, like, use it in comparison for themselves.
Right.
So take your heart rate in the morning, take your heart rate during exercise, take your heart rate 30 minutes afterwards. And have those numbers. So you're starting not only with the smiley faces, but you have numbers that you're starting to get a window into your body as to how it works, how it feels, how it's operating, and go from there.
And then is there a target number that you recommend in terms of like 85% of maximum capacity, or don't exceed a certain percent?
I mean, so in our training, we train like remotely. In person, it's a little bit different, but we train Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, Friday, and each one of those days has a warm-up, a posture and awareness focus, a quality situation, strength, conditioning, and accessory work. And within the conditioning, there's either, you know, an interval training day, which at the highest would be 80 to 90% intensity or output. Maybe there's a longer sled pulling, longer hike day, which would range from anywhere from like 30 minutes to like 3 hours. And that's a long, like, aerobic type of day. Other days would just be maybe a 15 minute kind of glycolytic. So just something sustainable for about 70%. So it's going to be varied all week. And we do that because we don't know if birth's going to be 3 days or 3 hours. Like, it's going to involve all three energy pathways. So if you don't have that sustainability in each of those three energy pathways, then it's going to be a little bit difficult.
What are the three pathways?
Phosphagen, glycolytic, and aerobic.
Can you describe what each is for those of us that without the science background?
So correct me if I'm wrong.
Okay.
Phosphagen, 10 to 15 minutes.
No.
That's
phosphagen
the first one.
Is like 0 to 10 seconds.
Yeah. So that would be sprinting, maybe a 1 rep max lift, as high as you can, box jump, just like.
So that would equate like what you're doing when you're pushing?
Pushing, yeah. Totally. Okay. The next would be glycolytic, which would be the 10 to 15 minute.
I think that's like from 10 seconds yeah. to like 7 minutes.
Yeah. So it's like the medium.
So yeah. like a contraction.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. And then aerobic would be
a long haul.
Yeah, like a marathon. yeah.
And I think to circle back and answer your question, yeah. it's the heart rate thing is important to you if it's important to you.
Yeah. That's a great answer.
If it's not important to you and you've are healthy and you've maintained good health for a long time and throughout this pregnancy, I wouldn't worry about it. If you feel it necessary to record it, but I don't think there's anything to compare it to or like a target because everybody's different.
So you were more, again, going back to how you feel, being
intuition.
In touch with your body.
Yeah.
And so like if you're working out second trimester and you feel aches and pains, normally some of those aches and pains, you plow through them, right? If things feel achy, you want to push
yeah,
through that. But sometimes it's like, no, that one is you need to take a rest.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
How do you decipher?
Man, so regardless of whether or not you're pregnant, it's like, is this pain or am I sore or am I pushing it? Am I suffering or is this like feeling the burn? Like, what is that pain? And again, that goes along with this like mind-body connection. That's a hard one to learn.
I mean, what happened? I mean, you guys are in touch with your bodies.
Yes.
But what about somebody who just isn't?
Right.
Say,
yeah.
We've had tons of women come to us and they're like, second trimester, I'm ready to be birth fit. We're like, great. What have you done? I've done a yoga class here
yeah.
and there.
Yeah.
I'm like, okay. So it's definitely harder for them to differentiate like muscle soreness mm-hmm. versus pain. And I'm sure you see it, like I see it in chiropractic too. Like, where somebody comes in the next day after they had their first adjustment ever and they're like, oh my God, that was so painful last. Well, can you describe the pain?
Yeah.
You know? Like, so it's really getting in touch with your body again and like pain, discomfort, all of that is your body's way of communicating to you. And, you know, one of the biggest things I use is, you know, if it's uncomfortable right now, we don't have to do it. If maybe a lunge on the left leg feels uncomfortable, then cool, let's not do it. We'll revisit it later. We'll come back to it 2 days later. If it's still uncomfortable, then get in to see the chiropractor mm-hmm. because that pain or discomfort shouldn't really be
Something's
there.
Something's off.
Yeah. Yeah, and that goes back again to this being in communication with your trainer, regardless, like whoever your trainer may be,
yeah.
you know, if it's remote with Lindsay or if it's in person or if it's your partner, you say, this didn't feel good today. Okay, can you describe what that was like?
Yeah.
Like, just talking through what was going on kind of helps people decipher
a few more
what is going on.
Words.
Or if you're your own trainer, just being in communication with yourself
yeah.
about it.
Or try to use a few more descriptive words besides just
that hurt.
Pain or that hurts. Or because that doesn't really... does describe the situation.
So
and I can really see that would be such a good skill to develop before labor because
mm-hmm.
we
yeah.
say that, you know, the experience of birthing and the sensation
yeah.
of birthing is pain with a purpose. It's different than breaking
yeah.
an arm or breaking
totally.
A leg.
Yeah.
All right. You guys post or somebody posts with the hashtag birthfit these crazy pictures. Only crazy because we haven't seen them before. Of super fit women with like a 6 month bump, you know, crushing heavyweight.
Yeah.
Right. So first of all, when's the birth fit calendar coming out? That's my first question.
Oh my God.
That'll be an
bikini
awesome
birth
calendar.
Yes.
Second of all,
brilliant.
You know, what's the deal with lifting heavyweight? Sometimes we see the guideline, you know, never pick up more than what your newborn baby's going to weigh
yeah.
and things like that. And so that would be a big-ass baby based on
yeah.
the pictures you guys are posting.
300-pound baby.
Yeah, that's
big.
What I'm saying.
I mean, there's a great book out there called Exercising Through Your Pregnancy, which is written by an MD, Dr. James Clapp. And I don't know why people just haven't read this book. It talks about training, talks about strength training, talks about training in the postpartum. But you know, like everything any, like in our world, it takes about 15 years to start to implement.
Yeah.
there's what's like, let's say my PR deadlift is 300 and something pounds. So is Imbo's. So for us to be lifting 150 pounds would be 50% of our max. So everybody's strength and their capabilities varies. So you, people have to remember that, like what's light for me, what's heavy for Imbo, all is all over the place. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I've never been one to put limitations on like human capabilities. And just the more I dug, the more like I found there was nothing to support really that those kind of claims. Don't lift over a certain amount. Don't do this.
Is this for people who've been lifting beforehand, or do you start weight training like?
We'll start lifting both.
Yeah.
And we take it really slow. We make sure they have a solid base, a solid foundation from which to build upon.
Yeah.
And you know, like we were talking about earlier, if there's a heavy single or if there's a set of squats or something, there's always a reference as to intensity, what it should feel like. And, you know, we only take certain 3 or 4 lifts above 80%. And those lifts are something mom has got to be confident that she's going to make. And this is not only to protect her from a musculoskeletal injury, because that would suck if you were pregnant.
Sure.
But also to like build her confidence. Because there's no reason to go into the gym, you know, you're training, you're building your confidence, you're training for birth, and you get up and you try to do this back squat and you have to drop the bar behind you because you just weren't being responsible. Well, not only does that set you up for maybe, you know, a little back tweak or something, but it's also going to diminish your confidence. And the next time you step up to that bar, you're already 10 steps behind where you started that time. And nobody wants to be disempowered, if that's a word, before you go into labor.
I think that's a word.
I think so too.
You, but you can go the opposite. You take people who never believe they can lift weight, or and you can take them second trimester, and have them start working out and pumping iron.
Yeah.
And then by the time they get there, they probably feel like there's nothing.
I had a
nothing
woman
they can't do.
Who came to us at 36 weeks, and she's like, "I'm a little late, but I want to be birth fit." And we're like, "All right, like let's do this." And
wow,
it was awesome. And
we put her on the training bar, and like
and
it
you
looks
know,
like a lot of weight, but it's
what was
not.
Cool is
well, that's
between
that's what I need.
36 weeks and 40. I think she went to 41 weeks. You know, she gained more weight or felt heavier, whatever it may be. And she's like, I just can walk up the stairs and not have it suck.
Oh, that's amazing.
And I was like, sweet. That's literally like why we're doing this.
At 36,
you feel good.
When you usually hear the opposite, I feel
opposite.
Like a whale. I can't
she's
move.
She's like, I feel
waddling.
So good walking up the stairs because we've been squatting
that's
and I'm
amazing.
Moving my legs. And I was like, that is it.
And she
really,
had a 3-day labor.
Yeah, and she's like, I can do that. You know, she had all this confidence. Because I was like, dude, you're 36 weeks pregnant, and all the guys here are watching you like, oh, my God, this is awesome, you know? And just, like, I don't know why people would say don't lift weights.
Well, I think part of it is the role of relaxin, especially later in pregnancy when all the connective tissue kind of loosens and things aren't held together as much. What do you see in terms of correlation with the increase in relaxin and risk for injury?
So I actually see, I don't know if you can answer this as well, but relaxin is has more of an influence on ligaments and rather than muscles. And for those that don't have any strength base, maybe they're super flexible. I see them as having more pain and discomfort throughout their pregnancy, as a chiropractor. That said, relaxin will be circulating around, but I don't see it as posing any more of a threat than a woman during her time of the month. Because also associated with ACL injuries is, you know, when it's my time of the month, ligaments are going to be more lax, and that's when I tore my ACL. That's when most, you know, ligament tears happen. It's just if they don't have a really solid strength base, then I see more pain and discomfort associated with that.
Well, that's a really good association in terms of, you know, having to be more careful around a certain time of month and pregnancy. And would you say that that is a valid concern? Because the same way you might need to be more careful when you're menstruating because of the relaxin? Would there be certain instances if you're feeling particularly open to maybe back off?
Yeah, I mean, and that goes back to like being intuitive. I think there's days you're gonna wake up where you're like, oh, I just don't feel like myself. And I get those days now, and I'm just like, okay, today's not a day to like test my one rep max back squat. So I think developing a relationship not only with your coach but with deep with inside yourself is like the main goal here. And I don't know if relaxing is really it's there along with, you know, really bad drivers out there and shitty diets. Like, they're going to influence just as much.
I always put those in the same category, too. relaxing makes my job easy. I think that's why I became a prenatal chiropractor. Everything releases so easy.
Yeah.
On super pregnant women. I imagine it does affect the ligament. So the joints will become less stable. And as you get more and more pregnant, sometimes that instability causes symptoms that if the muscles can kick in a little bit as stabilizers, you know, if they get a little bit more fit, then they can create that balance that maybe you're losing. I do imagine towards the very end of pregnancy, you're more likely to injure a joint, to overstrain a joint.
I think what ends up happening is people, like, besides her, the lady who was 36 weeks, but most people progress throughout their pregnancy and they get, running becomes uncomfortable or jumping becomes uncomfortable. Things just become uncomfortable, and that's their body's way of saying, hey, let's take it down a notch. Yeah.
Third trimester, getting ready for birth, right?
Yeah.
To squat or not to squat? That is the question.
Yeah, I mean, one of our biggest things is to squat all the time, because squatting opens up the birth canal by as much as 30%. And that's, you know, with weight, without weight, sitting in the bottom of a squat, watching TV in the bottom of a squat.
Just waiting in line at Ralph's, squat?
Yeah.
Just wherever you are, just keep it open.
Just duck walking
deep squats,
all the way.
Not so deep?
Yeah.
Open it.
I forgot what I was going to say.
What about Kegels?
Oh, wait, I'm still on squats. Is there a proper way to squat? Like, is there any precaution someone should take to protect their knees, perhaps?
Well, I mean, if you're squatting with a barbell, we want mom to, like, send her booty back, keep whole foot on the ground, keep your spine engaged, keep your chest up.
It's actually better for your knees if you squat all the way down.
Yeah.
As opposed to stopping at parallel.
Yeah, stopping at parallel.
On your joint.
And should the feet be parallel, or can you turn out your feet?
Well, that's going to depend on the person and their hip situation.
Both are good.
Cool. Yeah.
I'm a parallel squatter. Some people are turnout squatters.
I'm a little turned out because I got tight hips from soccer.
Oh, don't be hard on yourself.
Elliot wants to know about Kegels. What's the verdict?
I really want to know about Kegels.
I think they were all the rave for quite some time, but then, early in my birth fit career, I had a lot of moms that would say, I'm doing these damn Kegels all day and I'm still peeing in my pants. And, you know, it's just because they lack glute activation. I think Kegels have their place, but I also think glute activation is really important.
And by activation, you just mean glute strength?
Yeah. Like, actually having that neural connection from your brain down to your gluteus maximus.
To help you not pee?
Yeah, to lift up that sacrum off the organs.
Nice.
And in terms of Kegels in preparation for birth, would you say, is there any such thing as being too tight? Like, do you sometimes see women where they get so muscular that softness and the suppleness and the openness isn't there?
No. I actually wrote a blog about this, and I think Dr. Elliot read it.
I did.
A lot of people think, oh, you can be too fit, but to me, my definition of fit is having full range of motion in all joints, having strength, having flexibility, having as much grace as you do strength, being able to endure a marathon as much as a strongman competition. Like, that's my view of fitness. So to define fit would be the starting point. Too often I see where people train very one-dimensional, and that's what sets their pelvis up maybe not for success. Maybe they're on a spin bike 6 days a week, and then they go sit in their office and they're just shortening those hip flexors. Or maybe all they do is run, and there's no side-to-side action, there's no stretching, there's no hip range of motion happening. So that's kind of what I see there. We don't ever really tell anybody to do Kegels for labor and delivery. We basically have them squat, walk a shit ton.
Exactly. How many is that? How much?
It's
what
a
is the
big
metric? I would agree with you about the pelvis. I think that if you have a strong pelvis, it's great.
Yeah.
I think some of the best births I've seen are with women who have a really strong athletic pelvis. But if you have a strong and tight pelvis, you could run into trouble because the tightness on someone who's strong is more restrictive than the tightness on somebody who's weak.
And I think that, like, this could be a whole discussion. I think that's more related to mindset than anything. I think it's super controlling personality. Maybe they are dialed on their schedule, like maybe type A personality where it's really hard for them to surrender to the whole process.
Mm-hmm. But that's such an important point that Dr. B's making, in the sense that if you're strong and tight, it actually sets you back more in a labor than if you're just kind of uptight, but maybe don't have as much muscle mass supporting that tension. So how can a woman enhance the dexterity or the suppleness and the flexibility of her pelvis as she is developing the strength? Yeah.
Yeah. Range of motion is a huge thing. Mm-hmm.
That's why we squat all the time.
Yeah. As much
as
important as like the strength and the conditioning portions are, you know, so too are the accessory work and the quality work that we spend on, you know, opening up our pelvis, opening up our hips, opening up our chest. Just because we set a lot of range of motion stuff up in our training, and learning just to breathe through that is part of it.
Yeah, and if you're extremely tight in your hips, it's probably not because you just started back squatting with us. You know,
you've probably been tight your whole life.
Yeah, like go get a massage or see a chiropractor. There's something else going on.
Amen, sister.
Doctor, doctor, give me the news. I got a